Hello, this is the Trimmed Down podcast version of Tracks of My Life with me, Toby Davey. To catch all my guests' music tracks in full, do listen in to the hour-long version on RNIB Connect Radio every Tuesday at 7 p.m, repeated Thursdays at 1 p.m, and Sundays at 8 p.m. Hello, I'm Toby Davey, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life. Maybe the first track they ever heard, the first track they may have brought, and several tracks that mark moments in their life, as well as one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest today is Naomi Riches, MBE, who is a Paralympic bronze and gold medal adaptive rowing winner in 2008 and 2012, respectively. Through her Paralympic experience and achievements, Naomi is on a mission through motivational speaking to inspire professionals and others to reach their goals and be the best they can in life. In Naomi's Tracks of My Life, we will go on a journey from slightly tricky times at a mainstream school, then to better times at New College Worcester, before going on to university, and then to the first time that Naomi stepped into a competitive adaptive rowing boat in 2004. We will then hear from Naomi about what it was like competing in the first World Adaptive Rowing Championships in Spain that same year. Then Naomi reflects on how coaching young people to row helped her to recover after a very serious accident, which could have put a stop to her competitive rowing career. Naomi will then share what it was like competing in the London 2012 Paralympic Games from an athlete's point of view, the buzz of being there in the centre of the stadium during the closing ceremony and sharing that experiences with her fellow adaptive rowing crewmates, and how Naomi ended up singing along to a certain new romantic pop star's track, which due to the many GBR gold medals, was played quite a lot during London 2012. Hello, Naomi, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hi, so good to be here.
Naomi, as a rower, I suspect you have quite a number of tracks on your playlist, and I wondered how hard it was for you selecting your tracks.
Well, I do have an awful lot of tracks. I have a variety of playlists, depending on whether it's a test on the rowing machine or whether I'm prepping for a race or whether it's just general, you know, hour-long slogs on the rowing machine. So, yeah, I do have lots of tracks, but I know lots of people say this, but it was hard for some of them to find some of the tracks, but others just popped straight into my mind and I knew exactly what they were for and when and who and so on. So it was a bit of a mixture. It was a really interesting journey. Actually,
Naomi, for your first track, you have selected, I think, one of those classic comedy records with the wonderful Bernard Cribbins and Right Said Fred. Do you remember hearing that song for the first time and did it make you laugh?
Oh, it did. I don't remember hearing it for the first time. I just remember growing up with it. And I remember being a fan of silly songs and verbal humour as opposed to visual humour. Being visually impaired, it made sense to me. And when I was little, I listened to things like Junior Choice CDs and or cassette tapes, I think it was back then, and watched with mother, with my mum, and you know, sort of lovely old recordings. And also I loved Michael Rosen. What an absolute incredible wordsmith that man is. You know, I still enjoy listening to him on the radio. But yeah, verbal humour was always a fun thing. And now I love Monty Python and, you know, Victoria Wood's songs. She's an absolute genius. And it just, yeah, anything like that humour. And I just wanted to learn all the words. That's my thing. I like that song, so I want to learn it. I want to know it so I can sing along. And we always used to sing in the car to things as a family.
Right, said Fred, both of us together, one each end and steady as we go. Tried to shift it, couldn't even lift it, we was getting nowhere, and so we had a cup of tea. And right, said Fred, give a shout for Charlie, up comes Charlie from the floor below. After straining even and...
The wonderful Bernard Cribbins there with that comedy classic, Right, Said Fred. Naomi, we now come to life at school with your next track, and it's for Dolly Parton, A Coat of Many Colours. And I wondered how life was like at school for you. D- Did you feel different at all to your fellow pupils at school? And was life a bit hard for you back then?
Yeah, it's a really interesting. This was one of the tracks that I actually found it hard to choose. I couldn't think of something for my early years. I was not, school was a challenge. It was a really big challenge in many ways in terms of lacking in support from teachers. There were some teachers who were absolutely spectacular and went out of their way to make things easier for me. But I was in mainstream school, so it was always a little bit of an issue. And they didn't always have the facilities or the time. You know, I was one student in the school of 800, and I wasn't as important as I was a minority, really. I wasn't as important. And from other kids in the classroom who didn't understand my visual impairment, I was different, but, you know, they couldn't quite understand why. And they took the mick, you know, out of so many different aspects of my life. The fact that I was taller than everybody by about a foot. I always had big fat NHS glasses on, you know, tinted. I was sat at the front of the classroom. I had everything on sort of A3 paper because it was just easier to do it that way. I was behind on a lot of my grades, but always ahead when it came to art and graphics. And that confused a lot of my peers because I was meant to not be able to see well, yet the only subjects I seemed to do well in were visual. And so obviously it would be, oh, you're just doing it for attention. There's nothing wrong with you, really. So let's all, you know, hurl tennis balls at you at the same time and see if you can see them coming, kind of behaviour, which was really unpleasant. But I had a very sort of rich in terms of love and support family life. And the other week I was watching the Dolly Parton documentary on the TV and this song played and I thought, is it? That's the song that really resonates with me for various reasons and gives me a sense and a feeling of how I felt when I was at school. And, you know, to have that sort of pop into my mind. Because also one of the things Mum and I used to do, as I was saying about the Bernard Cribbins, we used to sing along songs. And I remember singing along to Dolly Parton with Mum because we had a Dolly Parton album on cassette tape. And I remember we both loved this song, but I'd forgotten about it for absolutely years. And then going through this process of choosing the tracks for this show, it was wonderful that it just popped back up. I didn't really talk about my musical tastes at school because, again, that was another reason for them to take the mick. I didn't have many friends that I could socialise with outside of school. I wasn't into popular music and I loved what my mum and dad loved because that was just what I knew. I think I bought a Spice Girls album because I felt I should, not because I actually enjoyed it much. You know, so music and admitting to my music taste has always been something that has been a little bit hard for me to do because I always felt that I'd receive a negative response for the taste that I had in music.
Looking back at those school bullies and thinking about what you've achieved in your life through everything, through your rowing career and everything else, do you think you've come out of it a stronger person than those bullies?
Definitely. I think I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking school would have been much better if I'd have had the attitude to life that I have now. And did that come about because of my achievements, or did that come about because of my experience from school helping to sort of form my opinion on the world? But in the last few weeks, I guess I did meet up on Zoom, of course, with a couple of friends from secondary school, or in fact my two wonderful friends from secondary school, Helena and Milan, who are just the most beautiful people. And we were talking about the girls, the in crowd at school. And I didn't realise there was, because one of the two was able to tell me a bit more about a situation that she understood after having left school herself, that she became aware of with one of the bullies and sort of the ringleader of the in crowd. And without going into too much detail, it kind of made me realise that I felt I was fighting my own battle. But and it's so hard to see it when you're on the receiving end of nastiness from other kids. It's so hard to imagine that they might be going through something horrific themselves. And it's clear now, looking back, that everybody had their own battle to fight. And it didn't excuse them. It did not excuse them for behaving the way they did, but it helps me now look back and understand why they might have been in that place in their minds themselves. And to a certain extent, I've kind of forgiven them for the heartache that was caused at the time, because they were kids, they were learning themselves, figuring out who they were, and obviously from now, what I understand, fighting their own huge battles.
Back through the years I go wandering once again, back to the seasons of how my mama put the rags to use. There were rags of many colours.
The Coat of Many Colours by Dolly Parton, who I suspect is an inspiration for many people when you think of her life. With your next track, Naomi, it's Gold by Spandau Ballet, which takes you to rowing career, getting into rowing, going to the World Championships and the London 2012 Paralympics. And we'll come to the Paralympics later. But I wondered what made you want to get into rowing at those very first days of going on a boat and getting out on the water?
I started trying a little bit of rowing at college when I was at RNIB New College, New College in Worcester, which I loved. It was just a wonderful place to be. I had such fun and learnt a lot about myself. And I was finally one of the people that could help and support others rather than the person that constantly needed support, you know, which is just a real turnaround in my head. and then I went to university in High Wycombe and I went to the local, well, the nearest rowing club, Marlow, and said, I'd like to learn to row, please. I've done a bit at college, but not much. And they said, really sorry, we're not doing learn to row courses at the moment. So I left and I went back to university and did a couple of years of being, you know, really unhealthy, and the only exercise I was doing was bicep curls at the student union bar, you know, that was me, an unhealthy student, and I thought nothing more of it. I got a phone call in 2004 from a guy called Simon who said, Naomi, your friend Paul from Worcester College has given me your number and I'd like you to come and try out for the Great Britain disabled rowing team. And I said, well, why on earth do you think that I, you know, fit the bill? And he said, well, three reasons. You're tall, you're a girl, and you can't see very well. And you exactly fit what we need. You tick all the boxes, basically. So I trialled in London at London Docklands and London Regatta Centre and was fast enough just to be able to get a seat in the boat. And we had the World Championships coming up 4 months later. So myself and Katie George, who I went to college with, who's now in the paracycling team for Ireland. She's a phenomenal sportswoman through and through. So we went and started rowing together. We went to our first World Championships in Spain in 2004 in Banyoles, which was the lake that the Barcelona Olympic rowing was held at. Absolutely stunning, stunning place. A little bit overwhelming, really exciting. It was Olympic year as well. So It was just phenomenal. And we were faster than everybody else. Don't know how that happened, but we just happened to be faster than everybody else and crossed the finish line first. And Gold by Spandau Ballet was the song that we sang to all our friends and family down the phone. When we phoned them, we'd gather around the phone, and when they answered and they'd say hello, we'd all go, Gold! And then our cocks would go, Gold! In the background, and we just sung the song to them. And then the family would be cheering at the other end, you know, back in England. So yeah, that really kind of reminds me of being warm and sat on the, you know, side of the lake in Banyoles and having just won our first World Championships.
It must have been a real buzz, because I think adaptive rowing was in its very early stages back
then. It was. Yeah, very early stages. We were all quite novice-y. You know, I look back at photographs from then, I'm thinking, oh no, that's really, really bad technique. But, you know, you've got to start somewhere. And everybody from all the countries that were competing were at that level. And we just happened to be a little bit ahead of them for whatever reason.
We know that a lot of rowers, through their training, had to get up really early and practice on the water. And I wondered if you could explain and describe what it's like for you as a visually impaired athlete being out there on the water.
It's just absolutely glorious. It's a wonderful thing. It's very freeing. Being in a crew boat is lovely. Rowing, actually, people say being visually impaired, how does that impact rowing? Truth be told, it doesn't in terms of the vision, because you shouldn't row by sight, you should row by feel and by sound. The sound of the rhythm of the boat, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. But where visual impairment does impact you in terms of a disability in the boat is your balance, your proprioception, your sort of coordination, spatial awareness, that is slightly off. And you have to do quite a bit to be able to train, tune your mind into those parts. So it might not look like it's, you know, in fact, there was a commentator on one of the one of the world championships, you said, well, they're all visually impaired in that boat, so that's not really a disability, not a disability to affect rowing. Actually, one of the guys in the boat had a damaged arm. It wasn't his eyesight at all, so that was wrong. But where it impacts is that proprioception, spatial awareness and balance. And my balance is shocking. I still try and train it by standing on one foot whilst cleaning my teeth, but it doesn't work. You know, it's just, yeah, crazy. But being on the water is freeing. And when we were training at Caversham, which is the GB training base near Reading, and it's a laned course, I can see well enough to be able to steer if I was in a single by myself between the buoys. That's fine because I can see where they are in most lights. Sometimes if it's choppy and the sun's really low, then I'm going to struggle because it just my vision decreases the brighter it gets. But the first time I went out in a single scull, and I realized I was the only one moving this vessel, and I was doing it totally independently, and I wasn't relying on anybody else. The sense of freedom, I've never driven a car, you know, I've never had that sense of freedom like that. I've ridden a bike and things when I was younger, but just having that freedom to know that I was in total control. If it went wrong, it was my fault, but if it went well, it was also my fault. Nobody else could take the credit, you know. It's a lovely feeling.
Just another play for today. Oh, but I'm proud of you, but I'm proud of you. Nothing left to make me feel small. Luck has left me standing so tall. Gold, always believe in your soul. You've got the power to know you're
Gold there by Spandau Ballet, a track that I think was played quite a lot during London 2012. Naomi, your next track that you have chosen is by the Kaiser Chiefs and marks a time in your life when you were recovering from quite a bad accident. Are you happy to talk a little bit about the accident, your recovery, yeah, and how you coped?
Yeah, absolutely. So still in 2004, I thought life rocked. I was, you know, world champion in a sport I've been doing for 4 months. I had a wonderful group of friends about me who didn't really think about my disability. They just would, it was me being Naomi, not me being the visually impaired friend or the visually impaired girl, which was refreshing to be in that sort of group of friends. And I was doing a degree I thoroughly enjoyed in jewellery and silversmithing, which for somebody who's visually impaired is quite challenging. But I think you've probably gathered by now, I quite enjoy a challenge. And I was out with some friends in London, and on the way back home, I attempted to cross the road thinking that it was safe for me to do so, as the lights had changed and the traffic should have been slowing, when in fact the silver Mercedes coming down the road was travelling too fast. And with my eyesight, I don't judge distances and speeds of moving objects very well, hence the reason I was so rubbish at PE at school. But yeah, I misjudged the speed of his car, and he hit me at about, I think, 30 miles an hour. And I kind of flew through the air, landing on the road, having five broken ribs, in fact, two skull fractures and a broken humerus and sort of slightly damaged shoulder. Fortunately, there was a doctor on the night bus who got off and managed to dislocate my jaw in order to open my airways before the paramedics arrived. Gosh. So he's my sort of angel. I've never been able to meet him. I've never been able to say thank you. So if this sounds familiar to anybody who knows a doctor who might have saved somebody's life on Archway Road in 2004, can you please put me in touch? Because without him doing what he did, I wouldn't have done all the things I've done since. I was in induced coma for a week. And when I came round, when you have a head injury, people do not know how you're going to be in terms of personality, whether you're going to have changed, you know, who you are. But I was fortunately still the very stubborn, very determined young lady that I was a week before. And I wanted to be back in that rowing world where my disability was not important, where my disability was the thing that people didn't worry about. It just so happened I was visually impaired, but we all had disabilities, and it was about how hard we worked and what we wanted to achieve that was important. I deferred the last year of my university, knowing that I would then graduate a year after all the friends I'd started uni with, but I needed that to recover. And my mum took 6 months off work to be at home with me every day, working on just getting routines into my life again, making me think about what we needed to buy to put in the fridge. Okay, Naomi, what's missing from the cupboards? What's missing from the fridge? What are we having for dinner? What do we need to buy? Let's write a shopping list. Let's walk to the shops together. Let's, where do we find all these things in the shops? Those are the sorts of things I had to retrain my brain to do. She was so patient. I know we had an awful lot of laughs, but I think I also had an awful lot of tantrums when I couldn't do things I felt I should be able to do. I think I'd had a tantrum with an iron in my hand once, which wasn't fun. But part of that recovery then, when I was able to, was going to London, because the lovely Simon Goody, who got me into rowing in the first place, asked me if I wanted to come to the Regatta Centre to help train juniors. And so I thought that'd be a great idea. I think Mum was quite nervous about putting me on the train. I think she came up the first couple of times, came up to London with me. But sticking me on the train, one end of the Jubilee line, with a little bit of GB kiss I had from the World Championships, you know, in Banyoles, feeling really proud, really independent, really grown up, with my Discman in hand. And in the case of my Discman was two CDs, The Killers, Hot Fuss, and The Kaiser Chiefs. And those albums I played over and over and over, back to back to back. But getting my independence back and sitting on the tube going into London and feeling like a really cool adult with my Discman. I don't know what was going on in my mind. That's what a head injury does to you. But yeah, so that really just reminds me of that year coming back to being my normal self, being me.
And your recovery was, part of that was coaching kids to row at the centre. And the track that you have chosen is I Predict a Riot. And I wondered whether the kids were, whether it was a bit like being in a riot coaching them to row.
Oh, yeah, absolutely was. They're brilliant. Kids are great to coach. They're like sponges. They take it all in, but they can also be quite a handful some of the time. But it was so enjoyable to be able to help and support youngsters to get into a sport that I'd only really been in sort of 6 or 8 months. But I was loving it so much. I thought everybody needs to have a chance to do this sport that I love. And I still do that now. I get involved with things when I can at Marlow Rowing Club in terms of coaching, you know, British Rowing's website, Zoom Ergos, which is fabulous. So I love giving something back to the sport. I think it's so important.
Watching the people get leery. It's not very pretty, I tell thee. Walking through town is quite scary. Not very sensible either. A friend of a friend, he got beaten. He looked the wrong way, it's a policeman. Would never have happened to Smeaton. And only Leo Denzi and
I. The Kaiser Chiefs Fair with I Predict a Riot. Naomi, your next track is a bit of a guilty pleasure for you, and I wondered if you could tell me what the track is and why you've chosen it.
Okay, so the guilty pleasure is where I found this song, actually, because it's another one of those songs. I was trying to think of something that represented 2010, which was a very important year in terms of my personal development within rowing. And I was going through in my mind all the playlists I would have had on my iPod shuffle. So I've moved on from the Discman in 2004 and we're now on an iPad shuffle in 2010. So I was going through thinking, what did I listen to? I was actually having to look up 2010 releases and tracks because I couldn't think. I recognized a lot of them, but none of them really made me go, oh yeah, that really represents, you know, that time. My guilty pleasure is sitting and just looking through the golden buzzer moments on Britain's Got Talent on Facebook. Don't judge me, people. Is it just such a lovely feeling seeing people succeed at something they're really good at, you know, and getting that feeling that they've done a good job? That's just such a wonderful thing to see. There was a wonderful dance group on there and they had this song, it's Fight Song by Rachel Platten. And I realized that it was a song I had on my 2010 playlist. So 2010 was an interesting year. Somebody turned up at rowing. We'd competed at Beijing, at the Paralympic Games in Beijing in 2008 and won a bronze medal, which was just phenomenal. It wasn't the gold. We wanted the gold. We went there for the gold. We came back with the bronze. At the time, hugely disappointed. But looking back, I'm immensely proud of that. And I wouldn't change it for the world, you know, if I could, but I wouldn't. So we get more funding. People are more interested in our sport. People turn up at trials with differing disabilities to see if they are fit enough, fast enough, with the correct disability to be able to trial for one of the British boats. Obviously, we knew by then London was the host city for 2012, so people were suddenly far more interested in being involved. This girl turned up at trials who was the same height as me. She was fitter than me in terms of physique. She was slimmer, she was more muscular, she was better scores on the rowing machine, heavier lifts in the weights room. She was just the most phenomenal athlete. And being visually impaired, it was either going to be me or her. We couldn't both compete because we were the same classification. So in classifications, mm-hmm. we were both B3 level classification. So it was one or the other of us, not both of us. And you know what? She terrified me because I thought, she is the reason I'm going to miss out on London. She's too good. I can't beat her. There's nothing I can do that will beat this goddess. And I went back in my mind to those school days where I was trying to fit in, trying to be as good as everyone else, trying to be someone that was successful. I was not trying to be a better version of me. I was trying to be like her. And like I was at school, trying to fit in. And it was the downfall of me that year, because when it came to final trials for New Zealand, I was so concerned and wrapped up in my mind about what she was doing that I totally lost sight, so to speak, of what I was doing. And she beat me by half a second to a seat in the New Zealand crew. Half a second is nothing, you know, such a tiny amount, but that's medals are won and lost on a hundredth of a second. So it's, you know, it's chunky enough. So I took myself away, I was asked to go and train at my local rowing club, not with the squad. My funding was cut. I had to go away and train and somehow come back faster and better and fitter a few months later for the next set of trials. Took myself away to the rowing club, and there was this one coach in particular, John Gill, who was just incredible in terms of giving me time to coach and to help and support me, because I was on my own. I was used to being in a team environment around other people, and it was wonderful. So I just had this brilliant relationship with John. He was hard enough on me to, you know, for me not to argue with him. He's a very tall, very strong-willed Scotsman, so I didn't dare argue with him. but he gave me that time and he gave me that energy and he helped me get better and get fitter and get faster and get stronger and really start to believe in my own ability and forget what she was doing back with GB. It didn't matter. It was what I could do and what I could put into the boat that was the important thing. And a lot of that, especially over a winter training period, is sitting on the rowing machine for 16, 18 or 20 kilometres. Boring. And you have to have really good playlists to get through. This was one of the songs on my playlist. And it was the time I started to really believe in myself, really believe in my ability, and really believe that I could win that seat back. Not that I could beat her, not that I was better than her. I just needed to be faster than her in the boat, and I needed to believe that I was good enough. And this song was one of those songs that made me feel that.
Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart open. I might only have one match, but I can make an explosion. And all those things...
Fight Song there by Rachel Platten. For your next track, Naomi, we come to, of course, London 2012 and the Yay! Paralympic Games with Coldplay's Viva La Vida. London 2012 was an amazing time for everybody, and my wife and I were incredibly lucky. We got tickets to go and see some of the games in the Olympic Park. But I wondered, for you as an athlete in there competing, was it a real special moment for you competing in your home Paralympic Games?
It was phenomenal. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to really do it justice with words. I just want to say to anybody who's listening, who was there, who shouted for a British athlete, who was a games maker, who was involved in the setting up the infrastructure, thank you. Because it was just the most incredible, you know, you talk to anybody about it now, and even if they didn't get to go and see anything, they just start smiling. It's infectious. It was just the most magical moment for this country. And I actually think a turning point in people's opinions of the Paralympics and people's opinions of Paralympic sport, because I think it was partly to do with the slight mess up with the tickets for the actual Olympics, that people were thinking, oh, I just want to go and see something. I want to go and be in this incredible environment. So I'll go to the Paralympics. And they went there, I think some people expecting to see disabled people playing sport and playing games and doing things. They saw phenomenal human beings doing absolutely inspiring and remarkable things. I think it really did change people's opinions of the Paralympics, and I'm incredibly proud to have been part of that. It was just wonderful.
And Coldplay obviously played at the closing ceremony to the 2012 Paralympic Games. And I think you were there singing along with all the rest of the adaptive crew.
Top of our voices. We were all just belting out these songs. And this song in particular, I was on my race day playlist. It was one of the songs I would listen to get myself ready to get in that boat and, you know, lay down the power. And it was, I just remember the camera coming towards Dave and myself, and Dave spotted it and he grabbed me round the waist and I grabbed him round the waist, and we held our medals up and we were just singing Viva La Vida at the tops of our voices. I think if you watch the entire closing ceremony, we're on the screen for about a second and a half doing this. And it was just the memory, the energy, the pride that was in that stadium. It was just, yeah, mind-boggling, really. I'm going goosebumpy just thinking about it. It was such an incredible thing.
Yeah, I remember watching it on TV, and it was just a special moment. And, you know, also have the Power Orchestra there as well. You know, it was just such a brilliant showcase for all sorts of reasons.
Absolutely.
Viva La Vida, there by Coldplay, and some special moments at the London 2012 Paralympic Games. And I think, Naomi, you had a special moment with Spandau Ballet as well.
Yes, absolutely. It was wonderful. We were at Paralympics GB House, where you kind of go, if that's where the central is, where the hub is, where everything happens. And we went in after we'd won our medal a few days later, and Stephen Fry was there. I got to meet Stephen Fry, who's just wonderful. But then Tony Hadley walked in and he got up on stage, and all the medalists had to stand behind him, and he sang Gold live, and we all sang it with him, and it was like, oh, I've gone full circle. So back to Spandau Ballet's Gold. It was just, yeah, it was slightly surreal.
Now, Naomi, we come to your final track, the one that you would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. What is the track and why have you chosen it?
It's Hall of Fame, the script, and Will I Am. I'd heard this song for many years and not really listened. One day I really listened to the lyrics. It's full of hope. It's full of promise. It's full of, you know, the knowledge that you can do more than you ever think possible. I looked up the video then as well on YouTube, the official video. And if anyone wants to do that afterwards, it's wonderful, because it's about two people from very different walks of life, both of whom are outsiders struggling to fit in for various reasons. And then they both find the place that they need to be to achieve and succeed, beating everyone else's expectations and beating the odds. And it's a really, really, really cleverly done video. I've actually used it quite a few times with various things that I've been doing. And whenever I play it to people, it makes them smile and makes them stand that little bit taller and that little bit straighter. And, you know, I've done quite a few challenges and things since retiring from sport, and I've had the ability to connect with so many new faces and new people that all want to achieve and all want to be part of, even if it's part of the challenge that I was achieving, they were part of the family. So it's kind of a wonderful way to pass that forward, but also to, in a way, thank all those amazing people that have helped me to achieve the things that I wanted to achieve and have achieved since retiring from sport. You know, rowing 2012 and 2008 and 2004, that wasn't all of the story. There's so much that's happened since. And it's just a wonderful song that really does keep me going. It's on all my playlists, whether it's a relaxing one, whether it's an ergo one, whether it's a race day one, or a, you know, it's on all of them. I absolutely love this song.
Well, thank you, Naomi Riches, for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest.
You can beat the world, you can beat the war. You can talk to God, go banging on his door.
You can throw your hands up, you can beat the clock. You can move a mountain, you can break rocks.
You can be a master, don't wait for luck. Dedicate yourself and you go find yourself.
Standing in the